Thank you, Gary. That was quick indeed. My name is Donald, and I'm an alcoholic. And I want to thank everybody for inviting me up here tonight. And I haven't had a chance to speak in a while. It's probably been about a year, so I don't know if I remember my story or not. So hopefully it'll be all right. I have it till about 5 minutes till 10 to 7, so hopefully we'll do this okay. I'll start right from the beginning. I started drinking when I was 14 years old. Before that, I always felt like, oh, let me back up a minute. I almost forgot. I did it when I came in. I got interrogated. my sobriety date is October 17th, 1994. My home group is the West Ghent Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. We meet on Wednesday nights. We have a book study, and we have a discussion meeting. And all are welcome. It's an open meeting. Let me start from the beginning again. I started drinking when I was 14, but I think in my case, I had all kinds of reasons, I tell myself, that I needed to get drunk. I was a young man, and I mean, you know, I had these things going on in my mind. And to me, I wanted to be an adult. I wanted to grow up. I wanted to be somebody. And adults in my family drank. My folks are in the Navy. My dad was in the Navy. My mother's father was in the Navy, and they all talked about drinking a lot. And so for me, and plus I remember watching, I don't know how many of you all remember this, the Dean Martin show. He was always drunk on his show. And, you know, at least he acted that way. And I thought there was something classy and cool about getting drunk. Now, here's what the problem was for me. We went out, and I had a twin brother, by the way. Let me back up about that, too. I went through my whole life up until that point thinking that there was something not right with me. But I thought it was because I had a twin. And then I thought it was because my folks weren't very rich. Then I thought it was because I was short for my age. Then I thought it was because I was a late bloomer. I had all of these reasons why I felt odd. It just didn't feel right. And it was worse than odd sometimes. It was totally twisted odd. Like I was blanked out with people. I just couldn't make contact. And I think part of that had to do with the fact that I had a twin. It made it difficult for me to make friends because I already had a friend. And so I didn't get through all of those social conditioning things that people do today. And I still have that problem today because I have a hard time making connection with people. But having said that, I just didn't feel right. And so I wanted to grow up fast. This was in the late 60s. And all these, you know, the maelstrom of politics was going all over the place. And I'm 14 years old, starting to wake up into my adolescence and thinking that I wanted to do these things. So my friend and I and my brother bought a six-pack of PBR, tall boy PBRs. And I had two, and he had two. And then I said, well, you know, I heard that you can get more drunk if you run around the corner. So I went running up and down the street because I wanted to get drunker. I'm 14 years old, and I'm already showing that I don't care about – what I care about is getting high. That was my whole – I mean, this is really ridiculous to say when I look back on it, but my whole life as a drunk was about me getting higher and drinking you under the table. I did all kinds of really interesting things. And I got fired from many really interesting things. But my primary focus was being sure that I could drink you under the table. I'd be the last person standing at 3 o'clock in the morning. Because those were my goals. That's how I thought. I don't know why. Don't ask me where I got that from because I have no clue. Except my own sick thinking. Because for me, I like drinking. And it made me something that I really wasn't at the time. It gave me something. It made me feel different. I fit into the world. I was more articulate. I was I already thought I was better looking than most people, but I was even better looking than most people. I didn't like dancing very much, but you know, I could dance, you know, and all these things that I got from drinking. And it started from the very first time I had those PBRs. I mean, and it went escalated from there. Now, you know, when I got sober, I had this mythology in my mind that I was like Yosemite Sam with a big mustache and a bottle in one hand and a cigar in the other, jumping out of the womb going, "Let's get drunk." It wasn't that way, you know, but I thought that most of my drinking was heavy drinking every day. And that's not what happened, because it took me a while to progress to the stage where I was drinking every day and every night. But my mind wouldn't tell me that. So what happened is that I was in a military school, and certain things happened there, and I got in a lot of trouble. You know, I won't go into all that stuff. It was not Fork Union, by the way. It was one down in Portsmouth. But I got expelled from that school, and I did a lot of crazy things. I don't want to go into all that stuff, all right, because you all have your own stories. You all know you've done those things. You're crazy like me. You know, I left wives. I left children. I left girlfriends. I left jobs. I left cars on the side of the street. You know, I mean, I did all of these crazy-ass things. So the point, though, is that, you know, I always thought that an alcoholic was someone who would shake. You know, they get up in the morning, they start shaking, and they got to have a drink. I didn't realize that alcoholism is something that I get early on in life, and I'm gone well before I get to the point where I want to get sober. I'm off the deep end. And so, you know, I had to go back when I got sober, and I had to think about what was it like when I wasn't trying to drink every day? You know, when I was in college, for example, I would drink on Wednesday nights because that's hump day. You know, and you go to Wednesday night, and they had to across the street from Old Dominion, they had bars, and you would go over there on Wednesday nights, and they'd have, you know, dime night or nickel night or whatever the hell, whatever bar you went to. Excuse me, I shouldn't be cussing. It's being taped. Oh, no. So in any event, I would go there, and so I would get up in the morning on Thursday, and I wouldn't drink till Friday, right? And then I would get really smashed on Friday, get smashed on Saturday, and not drink Sunday, not drink Monday, not drink Tuesday, and start drinking on Wednesday. And so what would happen is that eventually I drink on Wednesday, I drink on Thursday because, man, you know, I got to have a little bit more. And I drink on Friday, drink on Saturday, skip Sunday, go to Monday. Well, maybe not. You know, Monday's a good night to get drunk too. So, but I progressed into this habit of drinking every night. But it didn't start that way initially. You know, and I told myself that I was making these decisions, that I was deciding when I was going to drink and when I wasn't going to drink. And, you know, by this time, I wasn't throwing up blood yet. I wasn't shaking in the morning. I wasn't drinking in the morning. I was kind of, you know, but I'm a heavy drinker. And when I start drinking, I don't stop. I don't want to stop. And I tell myself that that's me making that decision. And that's not me at all making that decision. I think I'm making that decision, but I'm not. Because once I start drinking, that stuff kicks in. I get this phenomenon they call craving in the book, and the next thing I know, I'm up till 4 o'clock in the morning, drinking everybody else under the table, because that's the way I had a big friend, a guy played football. I knocked him out every morning, every night. He just couldn't keep up with me. And I thought I was something, you know, that I wasn't. That was the other thing about my perception about life was such that I thought I was going up when, in fact, I'm going down. I had, you know, the book says I can't tell the truth from the false. Well, that's a prime example for me that I'm doing this, and I'm thinking, oh, this is great. I'm going to get these good jobs, do all this new age. And I did some good stuff. I had some fun, but the whole time it's fueled by alcohol, and it's just happening, going and going. Now, you know, here for me, the best example I can tell you of what it means to be an alcoholic is I'm in my 30s now, and I'm drinking, you know, pretty much because I'm 30 and I'm an adult. I can do what the hell I want. Thank you very much. I can't tell you how many times I told women that, you know, stay away from me, you know, go away, but whatever. They say, now, what do you, why don't you come home? I, well, you know, I'm busy. You know, it's, so here's what happens. I get off of work, you know, depending on the job, let's say 4:30, 5 o'clock, and I drive to my bar, and I walk in. I'm a bar drinker. I like liquor. I didn't drink beer. Beer is for wimps, I think, I thought. You know, I drink beer in the morning. I don't drink beer at night. It's a waste of time. It's a waste of money. I'm ready to go for the good stuff. And so, you know, and I always drink my liquor on the rocks because I like to have it cold. And so I go into this bar, and I'm tired. I get off of work, and I'm just beaten. I'm like, oh, man, I think I'm just going to stay and have a couple and go home. Well, I'd have a couple. But for me, a couple is never an ounce. That's the one thing I want to tell you right now. You know, that's a couple. And that's about maybe four drinks. All right, I have two of those. And what happens to me? All of a sudden, I wake up. All of a sudden, I'm looking around and I'm going, oh, right, it's only 6 o'clock. Right? And my friends are going, it's 6 o'clock. I got to go home. And I'm thinking, you can't, what do you mean go home? And I can tell you literally, I mean, this is so horrible to say, but I remember looking people in the face and thinking, you're a wimp. What is wrong with you? Don't you know what you're missing? I had no idea that it was doing for me what it wasn't doing for them. I did not know that. I thought we all had the same reaction, and they were just going home because they were like controlled by their girlfriends or their wives or they, you know, or they're just wimpy guys. You know, it was horrible. But I thought that way because I'm in my cups. I'm thinking, well, I'm not going to stop because I'm, you know, beat myself on the chest and go out and do whatever I wanted to do. And it didn't happen once. It didn't happen twice. It happened every single time I drank. I woke up. I don't care how tired I was. I don't care what was going on in my life. When I started drinking, I woke up. And that's how, and I got all this energy. You know, alcohol is a depressant. Normal people go to sleep. They drink it and they go, they get tired and they go, and I didn't do that. And that response in my body fueled all of this activity that I was doing. It made me think I could drive drunk all the time. I have 7 DUIs. You know? Not recently. But I got 2 up here, I got 2 down in Florida, and the rest out in Missouri. I lived out in St. Louis for 9 years. And I just can't tell you how crazy that is. I mean, when I look back on it, and I just didn't know. I just had no idea that they weren't having the same reaction that I was. So life goes on, and it gets worse, and my drinking escalates, and things start happening. I start wrecking cars. I had a job down in Florida. They told me to go to see they said, you have a drinking problem and you need to go see a treatment center person, a drug and alcohol rehabilitation therapist or whatever. You know, and I don't know about you, but I have a very low opinion of therapy and psychiatry and all that stuff because I think they're crazy, not me. So I go see this person and she says to me, she says, you know that if you don't get, you don't, that you're being sent here by your employer. Yeah, I do. Yep, well, if you don't quit drinking, they're going to fire you. I said, well, okay, I'll do my best to moderate. And she goes, no, you need to understand something. She goes, are you an alcoholic? I said, I have no idea. I don't really care. She goes, do you have a drinking problem? What's my answer? I bet how many people have said this? I don't have a problem. They have the problem. I don't have, I'm having a good time. I'm doing my job. I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. They got the problem. Just go ask them if they got a drinking problem, because I don't. And she says, well, let me ask you a question. Can you quit drinking for 1 year? What are you talking about? I says, that's crazy. I would never do that. Why would I want to do that? Because you're going to lose your job. I don't know. You know, they're overreacting. That's all. I'm just I'm a hardworking guy, and I work hard, and I think I should have some fun in my life when I'm off of work. What's wrong with that? Well, you wrecked the company car last week. Just a minor thing. I didn't, you know. Well, you know, okay. She goes, okay. 6 months. Will you quit for 6 months? And I said, no. Now, I say that, but what's happening in me internally is that my stomach is starting to fall down to my knees because I know what she's doing. Then she's going to say 3 months, and I'm going to say no. Then she's going to say a month. And she did all those things, and I kept saying no. I won't do it. I'm not going to do it. I don't care if they fire me or not. I'm not going to do it. Then she says, all right, try this. 3 drinks a night for 30 days. And I was screwed. Because there's no way. I knew as well as I'm standing here that there is no way I could do that. I would be drunk maybe that night. Certainly by the end of the week. I am incapable of taking alcohol in my system and stop at 3. I've never had 3. I don't know what 3 means, except as a figure of speech. Let's go have a few, right? It's a figure of speech. It doesn't mean anything. It means 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning is what it means. Right? She says, well, you have a drinking problem. If you don't check yourself into this place, then we're going to do, okay, fine. So I said, great, we'll do it. So I go and I'm paying, I paid half and the insurance company paid the other half. It's like $800 or something I got to pay. So I go and I take my suitcase and I unpack it and I put it all away. And they said, come on out, come down to the main room. We go to the main room. They said, get in this bus and we drive to some meeting in Clearwater, Florida at an AA house. What do you call them things? Clubhouse. And I walk in the door, and all of a sudden I see all this God stuff on the wall. Now, let me back up. I'll tell you this, too. I was in college. My major was philosophy. Yeah, philosophy of all things. You know, and I was not going to do Jehovah phobia. I am not going to do God. Because, you know, if you believe in God, you must be afraid of something. And so I am not doing that. You know, for me, God was for weak people and women. Excuse me. But I thought that real men didn't believe in God. They just took the kids to the church because the old lady wanted them to. That was my belief. And if you were outside of that belief, then you were just a wimp, as far as I was. You're weak. All right, because I am a committed atheist. I know for a fact that the world just sprang into existence for no reason and goes nowhere. And I'm an existentialist, and I'm thinking, we make our own thing. We make our own lives. We do this. You know, we have our own values. We make our own thing. And I'm a Marxist. All right? So there's no such thing as this. It's all this, right? I had to become I don't want to talk politics, but I had to turn right to become a Democrat. I'm just crazy. So I go into this room, and I don't want to see these things hanging on the wall because I'm thinking, you know, this is all, these people are nuts. This is religion. Then I got mad because they said that I could sit here and learn how to get sober, and I'm spending $800 at the damn treatment center, and this is free. How stupid am I? But those people, I walked in that room, and they talked the way I talked. They looked the way I looked. They had the same kind of jokes that I liked. They told really rude, crass jokes that I loved. It was great. They talked about drinking and what it did and how it made them feel. And I went, oh, my God. But I can't do God. And so now I'm into this conundrum because I don't believe there's a God and I like these people. right? And we kept going back, and we kept going back, and I mean, it was a wonderful time. You know, I will say I even did a fourth step there. But, you know, if you haven't figured it out, when I, back in those days, I was really arrogant. So I'm going to write my fourth step, right? And it's all about me, so I can say, I put horrible things up there, but because I was talking about myself, I thought I was impressive. It was just sick. It's sick. So I get out of this treatment center, and I stayed sober. I was 28 days in the treatment center, and I stayed sober about another 90 days. I went to meetings, started off going to meetings, because I'm going to do the program, but I'm not going to do God. And I used a group, this group of people. I'm a materialist, right? It's a group of people. God speaks, you know, whatever that thing is, they speak to me through the people. It's the people. Well, I came to the real to believe that the people were idiots. And if you don't respect that God, I mean, how am I going to listen to what's being said to me the truth of the matter is that I wasn't sober. Because sobriety is not what I get in my body. Sobriety is what I have in my mind and my spirit. And so in my mind, I'm still got all this sick crap going on. And I'm thinking, this person's an idiot. And this person doesn't know what they're doing. And this person's okay. And wow, she looks great. You know, my mind is every place other than where I'm supposed to be. So then I say, well, you know, I'm in Florida now, and here it is. It's, it must have been in January or February. And so I decide I'm leaving Florida. I'm going to Kansas City where my girlfriend lives. She's my girlfriend at the time. So I packed up everything I got, and I split and went to Kansas City. In the middle, I went north in the middle of the wintertime. You know, that's the extent that I want to go to get drunk. That's what that was. Because people knew me down there, and I couldn't do it safely. But I go to Kansas City, and boom, she goes away for a weekend, and I must say, I went to two meetings in Kansas City. Great town, but they were all kind of funny talking country people. And I just said, they're just kicking cow pies out there. I can't relate to that. I'm not going to do that. So in my mind, they're just a bunch of hicks. But, you know, I don't know if you've been to Kansas City or not, but it's a damn cosmopolitan town. It's got one of the best art museums in the country. It is a great place. There's all kinds of good sobriety in Kansas City. But I didn't want to find it because I didn't want to find it. I had other plans in the back of the mind. So I went out and I started drinking again. And I very quickly went back to exactly the place I was. And this time I didn't stop for 9 years. And it got worse and worse. And I didn't have a sober night or day for 9 straight years once I started back up. The sequence ended, began to end in probably October or November of 1990. I had moved to St. Louis, had a nice job. You know, it says in the book in Doctor's Opinion, where the guy has this important appointment he's going to make and he's going to do these things, and all of a sudden he gets drunk and blows the whole thing. Well, I was supposed to meet the head of the Democratic Party in Columbia at 10 o'clock at night to talk about this organization I was working for. It was going to help him work in a senatorial campaign. And I got really, I couldn't do it. He said, I can't meet you until 10 o'clock if I got on the meeting. All right, I'll meet you at 10. I was drunker than a skunk. And it went away. And I sat and I got in the car. We drove back. I bragged about how well I did and what was going on. Give me another drink. We're going to have a great time. We're going to do all this. The guy never called me. I don't blame him. I mean, I don't blame him. I'm talking to an idiot, an alcoholic idiot. So it must have been, I picked these people up and was driving to Columbia, Missouri to have a meeting and got pulled over by the police at, let's see, 9 o'clock in the morning. And I hadn't gotten up and drank. I stopped at 4 o'clock and got up, had a little bit to eat, took a shower, picked my friends up, got pulled over at 9 o'clock in the morning. And the first thing the guy says to me, the state trooper, "You been drinking today?" "No, not today." Right? "Not today." Pulls me out of the car, puts me in his car, takes me over to get a breathalyzer test. I blew, I like to call it the mid-range, 0.24, 0.23, 0.25, or 0.26, something like that. The mid-range. Not dead, but clearly drunk, but feeling good. Now, here's the thing. To me, that was normal. I didn't know I was drunk. I just didn't know it. It's 9 o'clock in the morning. I'm feeling like I always feel at 9 o'clock in the morning. I had no clue that I was drunk. So that started the process. From that, from there, I got fired from my job. I lost my house. I mean, my apartment. I started losing things on a weekly basis for the next 4 years. And finally, I ended up in a basement in St. Louis, hooked on crack cocaine and drinking like a fiend, drinking tequila and smoking crack, living in a basement. It was horrible. It was absolutely horrible. I got in on a bus and said, "Well, you know, I'm going to take the cocaine, or I'm going to take the tequila with me. One, but I can't take both." So that's when I had my experience with a drug of no choice. People always hear about the drug of choice. I heard someone call it a drug of no choice. I chose to leave the cocaine, but there was no way I'm driving all the way on a bus back to Virginia without having tequila. I'm not going to do it. I can't live without it. So I get back here to Norfolk and spent 6 months with my brother, who was an alcoholic, who died. He's my twin brother. He threw up on himself and choked to death. And we found him 5 days after he was dead. He only weighed about 130 pounds. He looked like he weighed about 210. He was all bloated out. He was so bad that they couldn't embalm him. They just threw lye on him and zipped him up in a bag and put him in the, and we buried him. It was horrible. But I didn't stop drinking. I celebrated his life. I even used it as a way so I could stay out drinking for days on end for my job. "But I can't come into work today." Couldn't. I mean, that's what I did. It's horrible. Well, then this woman that I knew from way back came walking to the place I was working. For no apparent reason, was waiting for something to happen. She was waiting for a meeting or something. And she walked by me, and I said hello to her, and she looked at me like, "Donald Smith." I said, she goes, "What time do you get off?" I said, 6 o'clock. She goes, "Well, I got to talk to you." Okay. You know, I stink. I'm a mess. But I'm like, "Oh, yeah, okay, good." She wants to remember. You know? So she takes me out. She goes, "We got to talk. We want to go." I said, "Let's go to Patty's Pub," which is right down the street from where I was working. And we go in there, and she says, "I got to tell you something." She goes, "I'm sober for like 10 years now, and I've been looking for you. I need to make amends." And then she made amends to me. And she said, what do I need to do to make it right?" Now, what do you think I said?
"I did drinking."
Exactly. I didn't say, "Let's go home." I said, I want you to buy me 3 drinks of Stoli on the rocks, and then give me $10 so I can go buy some vodka. Because back in those days, you could buy this really rock-cut stuff out of the ABC store called Pop Off Vodka for $4.99. It was horrible stuff. You buy 2 half-gallons of that stuff, and I'm set. So I said, and I told her not to make me a project. But she wrote her name and her phone number and gave me the money, bought me the drinks. I didn't care about her. Why would I didn't care about her. I was in another place. So she gave me her name and phone number. Then periodically I'd call her on the phone. "I want to get sober." She goes, "Don't drink today. I'll come get you for a meeting." So then about 3 o'clock I'd call her back. "I think I made too much out of this. I'll talk to you later." And that dance went on for a while. And then one, I don't know why, But I was drunker than a sky. I had been on a, like a seven-day bender. Now, I maintenance drinkers, they call them maintenance drinkers because it sounds better than what it actually is. You know, I'm a binge drinker, I'm a maintenance drinker. Oh, bullshit. Excuse me. I drank every day. That's what I did to maintain. And that's to maintain my sanity and keep me from doing one of these numbers. I mean, that's called maintenance drinking, and that's a horrible thing. So, any of that. I'm drunker than a skunk, and she comes and picks me up and takes me over to Kathleen Kay's house. And a bunch of other AA people are sitting around the table, and I never had a drink after that. I never really made a decision. I don't know why it happened. I don't know what happened, but I just woke up the next day, and I never had another drink. That was on the 17th of October, 1994. That's the grace of God. And after, I mean, you know, and that's not telling you all the stuff. That's the grace of God in my life, doing that for me. I never made that decision, but I did know if I was going to get sober, I was going to have to throw away all this stuff that I had. But I was so bad, and my life was so much a wreck that I just blank, you know, the tabula rasa, the blank slate, right on it. And that's what I became. I just went to AA, and I kept my mouth shut, which is people that know me are amazed. I didn't talk. I didn't go to meetings. I didn't talk for 17 months. I got a sponsor. I worked the steps out of the 12 and 12. It was a wonderful experience. But, you know, I need to say something about that. You know, I didn't really get sober until I started working out of the book. And that's the truth. But I will say that the book says that the road is broad and roomy. And it is true for all people that seek God. And so I think in my life, it was broad and roomy for me when I started. And I got exactly what I needed to get sober. And God doesn't care what I do. God cares that I do. And I could pick it up. I could get the other crazy stuff later. You know, I get the stuff that's bothering me right now. And as time goes on, if I stay sober, it all kind of picks itself up. And next thing you know, boom. You know, you got 17 years and all of a sudden life is wonderful. Of course, life was wonderful a long time before 17 years. I mean, I can't tell you how great it's been. So I did all this stuff. I got a home group and I worked the steps. But, you know, at 5 years sober, I'm kind of crazy. I'm, you know, something's not right. I'm missing something. There's this thing going on, and I don't know what it is. You know, and I talked to this guy, and he says, you know, you need to look in the book. The book's got the answers. You know, this other stuff that you're reading, it's information. It's not really a spiritual approach to sobriety. The book will give you a spiritual basis for your sobriety. You know, I've had spiritual experiences, but I had never had a spiritual awakening. And that's what I think I needed. And so I started reading the book with a woman, and it was terrific. I mean, it just changed my perception of what was going on around me and the people in Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, I heard someone say once that, you know, if you want to get sober, you got to stick with the winners. You know, someone said, well, you know, that means there's losers here. And you better find out who they are and not stick with them. Because if you don't, you'll be out there drinking or doing crazy things. And I'm thinking, well, you know, I'm getting ready to do some crazy things. I won't tell you what they were, but they were giving me some crazy things, not involving drinking. But what I found out that once I have a state of mind that's set, it takes me a long time to get that state of mind changed. And the only thing that keeps me from going nuts is a psychic change, a spiritual awakening that comes in between me and my craziness, the alcoholic ego, if you will, and the person that I think I am. I always thought that alcoholics were like addicted to alcohol. That was my first thing. And I found out it's not true. You know, and that allows people that I know who are in their 20s to get sober. Because I could never have. I mean, I would look at these kids and go, get sober at 20? What are you, crazy? I mean, they'd never enter my mind. I was told I was an alcoholic at 17.
So what?
But that attitude keeps people from getting sober, my attitude. And if I realize that people are, I was alcoholic long before I became addicted to alcohol. Long before I was addicted to alcohol. And then there are a lot of addicted people who are addicted people who are not alcoholic, which blew my mind. But as I go through my life, I run into those people in AA. And it's good. They come in here, they get sober, they go away. Great. They can go do whatever they want to do. Fine. Wonderful. I think it's a great, wonderful thing for them. But for me, you know, I stay inside the circle and the triangle because that's where my sobriety is. And so I'm kind of like, I'm the doorman. I open the door and I shut the door. I open the door. They come in and they leave. They come in and they leave. And the people that are alcoholics stick around. I see it more and more because they're the ones that are alcoholic and they're here to help AA grow and be an effective spiritual thing. I don't know what to call it. Not, I hate the word organization. It sounds so trite. I was taught early on to get involved in service. So I did. I'm going to tell you all of this not because I'm bragging, all right? But I believe that there are three sides to sobriety. There's a physical, spiritual, and a mental side. And I got to practice recovery, unity, and service, which addresses all three of those sides of my problem. And when I'm going to tell you about it, I did these things, and they're wonderful. I was an intergroup rep, the GSR. I was the DCM. I was able to, they asked me to serve on the committee for the Public Information Committee at the DAC. I then went over and did the treasury for the intergroup. And then I was the president of AA in Virginia. That's what my title, because it's a, you know, anyway. I was president. And I made him call me Mr. President. No, I did not. But I did all those things. And the best job I had in that little service structure was being the treasurer, because it was a commitment that I had to do every 2 weeks. I had to pay somebody. I had to do it by myself. I couldn't brag about anybody. And I did it for 2 years. And it was a great, great job. And I would go to the intergroup meeting and stand up there and go, read it. Any questions? Thank you very much. And I always like being your alcoholic treasurer. People kind of like that. I'm taking care of their money, and I'm a drunk. That was my best job. But I'm doing now is I got involved in doing corrections. So we're taking a meeting into the Norfolk City Jail every Thursday night, and we take a meeting out to the Indian Creek Correctional Facility on Saturday night, which is a big book study. And that's my service stuff right now. I just can't tell you how important it is to do it. But let me back up a minute. You know, a service job is making, well, see, I'm not doing, that's not doing service. I'm carrying the message, actually, when you think about it. So I don't have a service job. Oh, no. I chair the meeting. I'm the business chair at my home group. So there's one other quick thing I want to tell you about, and I had alluded to it earlier today. And this is my experience, so I'm just going to tell you my experience. I'm going to tell you what happened to me and how it worked, and that, and maybe it'll help you, maybe not. But I suffered through some depression. And I thought that people kept telling me in AA, you should go see somebody for that, and you should go take some drugs for that, you know. And somehow I thought, alcoholic pills, nah, I don't think that works. Something's not right there. And so I didn't do it. And I thought that this was a thing from God, because, you know, I was meditating. Now, let me go. When I was in when I was drinking, I told you I was a Marxist, so. You know, back in 1979, the East German gymnastic team used to listen to Baroque music and meditate because it focuses the mind. And they found these things called alpha waves and beta waves. And so there's all these scientific reason that they had found to do meditation. So I would meditate even when I was, you know, drinking. So when I read in the step it said meditation and prayer, I had no problem doing meditation. So I have always kind of done it on and off. And at one point I had this thing and I just saw myself looking at my depression. And I realized that it was part of who I was as a person, but it wasn't who I am as a being. And I thought, well, you know, I was depressed at the time. I thought, well, that's God's gift to let me know there's a separation between my spirit and my mental condition. And so I just suffered with it and said, I got a gift from God. You know, it was stupid. But that's where I was. And so it got really bad at one point. And I called my sponsor on the phone, and I said, Bill. And he goes, how's it going? I used to, you know, I was 7 or 8 years sober, and he says, I got this guy as a sponsor, and he said, you got to call me every day. And I said, I'm 7 or 8 years sober. What the hell are you talking about? I'm going to call you every day. No, call me every day. So I lied about it, and I called him sometimes, and said, you know, all that kind of stuff that you do. But eventually I got to the point where I realized that me taking advice from someone else is more important than what I want to do. So I did what he asked me to do, and I called him every day. It was the best experience I've had with this guy. He was unbelievable. So I called him on the phone, and I said, I have anxiety today, is what I told him. I have some anxiety. He says, well, that's just a 10-letter word. That's a 10-letter problem. It's a 10-letter problem for a 4-letter word. Or a 4-letter problem. Something like that. You get it? And I thought, what the hell is he talking about? A 10-letter... I forgot. I don't know. Anyway, he says this. And I go, and I said, well, you know, okay, fine. He goes, no. He goes, you don't have anxiety. He goes, what is anxiety? He starts laughing at me on the phone. And I'm thinking, why is this guy laughing? I'm depressed. He can't be laughing at me. And he goes, look, you have a 4-letter problem for a $10 whatever. Hey, I'm gonna find that, and before I'm done, I'm gonna remember what he said. Oh my God! See, it's been a long time. Luckily, I'm not depressed anymore, or I would like sulk away now. So, in any event, I don't know what he's talking about, and so it gets worse and it gets worse and it gets worse. And I got really mad at my home group meeting. I come home one night, and I somehow open up the book to page 52, and there it says depression in the bedevilments. And I went, oh, my God. So I went back, and I said, well, you know, am I powerless over depression? Is my life unmanageable? It's affecting me physically. It's affecting me mentally. And it's affecting me spiritually. I have an alcoholism problem. I'm in untreated alcoholism, and I don't know it. I had no idea. So then I said, well, clearly, this is untreated alcoholism. Do I want God to restore me to sanity? I've come to believe, well, maybe he can relieve this, too. So, well, all right. Then I have to turn my will and life over to God, all right. Well, then I have to inventory this, because I got to know what the life is that I'm turning over to God. So I did inventory on it, on depression. And I found out what it was. It blew my mind. It totally blew my mind. So I call him on the phone. I'm not telling you what it is, by the way. So I call him on the phone. I said, I got it. He goes, well, good. I said, I'll come over tomorrow and read this inventory to you. No, next week. Because that's the way Bill is. And it made me sit in it, and I wasn't in control. And I went, oh, Jesus, you sorry, okay. So, but by the time I was over there, and I sat down, and I read it to him, and he sat there, and he looked at me, and he was, all right. He didn't say anything. He says, all right, do you know what to do now? I said, go home and ask for it to be relieved? He goes, yep. Okay. So I went home and I read that little part after the fifth step about where all the stones in place and all that kind of stuff. And then I asked God to remove this defect of character I had, which is depression, based on this. Well, I didn't say depression, but something else. And boom, it went away and never came back. That happened when I was about 8 years sober, and it never came back, ever. There are little times when I get little inclinations of it, and I know exactly what it is, and I apply the steps to it, and boom, it goes away. Now, that's my experience, and I don't, you know, some people I know that they're nuts, they're naturally nuts, you know, but we are me. I want to be nuts because I don't want to be alcoholism. It's got to be anything other than that. And it's the most simplest answer, and I don't have to worry about it. I mean, I just let God take care of it. And when I realized what that was, then I really began to turn my life over to God in a way that I had never done before. And the more I did that, my life just really took off. In my mind, not just, I don't mean in my mind, like you know, dreaming things up, but my serenity, the things that were going on around me, things just didn't bother me anymore. I really came to understand what this thing was all about. It just totally changed me. Totally changed me. And I just, you know, I can't tell you how much I appreciate what he did for me. Because he didn't tell me what it was. He made me find out. He made me do the work. He goes, I can't give you a spiritual experience. You have to get your own. He used to tell me all the time, he says, you know, you go to meetings and people say, if you want my God, you can borrow mine until you get your own. Bill said, no. He goes, you can't borrow mine because mine might get you drunk. Find your own. Get your own spiritual awakening. Find your own contact with God. You can't borrow mine. And I really believe that today. And it's that kind of stuff that, you know, and tons of other stuff that I get when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous that I never have. I actually learned how to live my life on a basis that I had no. I just thought I was coming here to get sober. I didn't know what sober meant. I just thought I was going to get the alcohol cleaned out of me and I'd be okay. I'd be running around doing what I want to do, having fun, you know, making money, doing all that shit. And it didn't happen. I had one sponsor tell me that, you know, I was 5 years sober. He says, you know, when you start off in the negative numbers, it takes you sometimes 5 years to get to zero. Because in your case, you got 2 more years. I said, oh, God, that's crazy. One other thing. Cunning, baffling, powerful. 10 years sober. I'm doing all this service work. I'm doing all this stuff. I go and I got sponsees. And I walk into Home Depot, and I buy a vanity for my house. I walk out, I take it home, it doesn't fit. I put it back in the car, I take it back to Home Depot, walk up to the exchange lady. She gives me my money back and says, you can go back and get the vanity over here. And I went and got the vanity and walked out the door with it. And in my mind, I'm going, I got over on the man. I got over on him, all right. I called my dad. I said, you know what happened? Oh, yeah, great. Good dodge. Good job, Donald. I called my sponsor in the morning. And he goes, you did what? He goes, you got to look at that. I said, what are you talking about? It was God's gift. He gave me $95 in a vanity. Right? I knew. So I had to do inventory and look at this, and then I had to take the damn thing back. And I said, but Bill, I mean, you know, I committed a crime here. I don't think I want to take it back. He goes, no. He goes, here's what he said. He goes, Donald, you can have all of it, or you can have a little bit of it, or you can have none of it. And it's what you can live with. You can live with anything in Alcoholics Anonymous, anything at all. If you can handle the pain and handle the consequences of what you're doing, then you can do it. So if you don't want to take it back, that's your decision to make. And I thought, well, I said, why do you put it like that? Why do you say that? You know? So I took it back. And it didn't, nothing worked out the way I thought it was going to work out. It was fine. And I apologized. I asked the guy what I could do to make it right. He told me to take the money and spend it in the store. That the vanity that they had was now back in the training room with a thing on it, says, what's wrong with this transaction? So all the new sales reps are learning how to properly do take and return merchandise. So it worked out okay. But I say that, tell you that story, because it happens that I'll just walk into stuff and not realize what I'm doing. It just happens. I'm not proud of it. It's kind of funny, but it makes me remember at all times what kind of danger alcoholism is to a guy like me. There's a guy in down in Norfolk named Bill A, and he always, when he introduces himself, he says, I'm sober today. My name is Bill A, and I'm sober today by the grace of God and the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And when I used to hear that, I'd say, well, you just shut up with that. Tell us who you are. I don't want to hear all that other bullshit. Well, today, I can honestly tell you that I really am grateful, and I'm sober today by the grace of God, because I don't know how I got here. And I'm also sober by the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I've learned to wake up in my life. I think sobriety is about being awake. And the more I'm awake, the more I am awake. It's just amazing. And, you know, I think, you know, there's a great line someplace. I heard it when I was drinking. I'm almost done. The great line, it says, chance favors the prepared mind. And in AA, we say that chance is God acting anonymously, right? So God favors a prepared mind. What does that mean? Well, it means that I'm not going to recognize an opportunity to be of service to somebody or to do something nice or something that God wants to give me if I'm asleep. It goes by me. I don't see it. But if I've done the work and try to be of service and practice my principles in all my affairs every day. I get up in the morning. I do the same routine every morning. I've done it for 17 years. Bill got me on it, so I've done it for 6 years, since I was 6 years sober till today, 11. So God has given me a lot of opportunities. I had a phone call from an attorney, and a guy is going to give me a business, and I'm going to pay him as a consultant because he can't sell it. So I'm being given a business. You can't get from throwing up blood in an efficiency apartment to someone calling you on the phone and giving you a business without the grace of God in your life. And I'm convinced that that's true for every one of you, as well as me. And I really do think that if you just do what you need to do to try to stay sober, that God will give you what you need to have. And I just believe that. Now, I don't know that the business is going to succeed. It could fail tomorrow. I mean, you know, nothing's for sure. But I got an opportunity. I wouldn't have never had it before. And I'm awake in my life. And I'm understanding what's going on. And I'm going to do those things. And so it is an amazing process. And I really come to believe that everything in my life is about being of service to other people. All of it. I can't be anything other than who I am. And it's gotten better, you know. It's gotten a lot better, and so I don't like it when I go to meetings and people tell me that, oh, I'm still screwed up in the head. Well, you know, well, if you are, what are you doing talking about it? Do something about it. Stop sitting around complaining about how awful your thinking is, and do something about it, because things get better, and God wants me to work. That's just the way it is. I got to do this stuff. And when I do, wonderful things happen. I have very little fear in my life. I have very little anxiety. I have no anxiety, as a matter of fact. Things are just what they are. And I never knew how to do that until I got sober and I thought it was anonymous. And by the grace of God. So thank you very much.